This is the Happy Work Podcast, where we discuss all the things we can do to make our work, and with it, our life better. Welcome back to another episode of the Do Happy Work Podcast. And I have the immense pleasure today again to have a beautiful, wonderful guest with me. Please, everybody, welcome Ariana from Brands Are Alive.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello. So, as some of you know, I don't invite just any guests onto my podcast. Guests have to earn their spot. And how do they earn their spot? Well, by being human value entrepreneurs, people who believe and live the principle of natural concepts in their work and forward their happiness in the work to others. And Ariana is someone who I have been in touch with for a couple of years now. We spoke here and there, and we are also LinkedIn buddies, right? You can say so. And Ariana has a very interesting background and does incredible work, and she has an even more incredible tagline in her work that she uses. Maybe I'll let you speak it out.
Sure.
What is it that you say?
I only use it for LinkedIn because LinkedIn only deserves this tagline. Oh. I help spiritual creatives unclench their buttholes. And the reason why I use that on LinkedIn was because I needed to do LinkedIn my way, you know? And for a little bit of context for the listeners, how you and I met, which, you know, I know I thanked you before, but I have to say it again because really those conversations we had a couple of years ago, I remember those conversations were really pivotal. And I was in a very challenging time, you know, as I was transitioning from a quote unquote successful business that was on paper great. Anybody would have looked at it and went, what's wrong with you? Why would you want to leave that to go try this other thing that makes no sense logically? Mm-hmm. But I felt something within me really wanted to express. I felt the need to express more of who I was. And you were the first person I met on LinkedIn who I felt was a real human being. After that, I met lots of people and amazing human beings. I've met some of the most incredible people on LinkedIn. But if you had told me years ago that you'd meet these kinds of people on LinkedIn, I would have said that's impossible, right? Mm-hmm. Later on, I learned it's because of who I was. That's why I was attracting the kind of people. I was not in alignment with myself. So, of course, the kind of people I was attracting, I was like, no wonder I'm not comfortable. It's because they're attracted to a fake version of me. But I didn't even know that. But anyway, I met you and we had those conversations. And I want to thank you again for really showing me a different way of having relationships. I felt that you opened your heart fully to me. I had at the time just finished this like long relationship with a coach that I had lots of hopes, and then that didn't work. And then mm-hmm. I met you in one conversation, just the way you were and how you spoke to me and who you were in that conversation, really, it helped me heal something. And I remember crying, which is something I didn't do a lot in those days in front of people, especially people that I was meeting for the first time or speaking to for the first time. So I'm incredibly grateful that we met and for those conversations. And I want to thank you again.
Well, thank you so much. And just a full disclosure, I didn't know that she was going to say that. Okay. So
no, did not know.
This is
no,
beautiful.
No. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Ariana. And it shows once again that when we are ready to receive whatever teachings or guidance from the universe and we open ourselves up to it, well, the universe gives plentifully. And I am very grateful that I was there at the right time and right moment to, you know, to make that call, to have this call with you, and that it helped pivot whatever you then decided to pivot so that you can now help spiritual creatives unclench their buttholes.
Well, now, you helped me expect something.
I mean,
that I was denying to myself, and you were like, yeah, I see that. What are you doing? Like,
well, this is the kind of thing that I do, that I like doing. I like poking people, especially when people are just on the, you know, on this threshold of really going for their greatness, but they have to somehow still ask themselves and maybe someone out there for permission. You know, like you, when you're at like 98.5% of permission base, and you still need that 1.5% to go over the threshold. It can really help, especially when you have an outsider that is just there and just says what your heart needed to hear to just push you over the finish line or over the boundary line, right?
I think what happened for me is that at the time I felt like I was going crazy because I just couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why I thought that way and why I felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very helpful to meet someone else who had gone through that path before, who made a call that, you know, you told me a little bit about your story. I remember the work you were doing before and how, you know, you went on that run in the forest, saying something to clear your...
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that story. And I was like, okay, I mean, I had already made that decision. I started moving in the new direction of the new business, but I was still, part of me was still not letting go of certain things that I had built so much of my identity, false identity on, right? Mm-hmm. So I had all this experience in loyalty marketing for e-commerce. I was like, maybe I could bring more of myself to that instead of saying, hey, you know what? Maybe I need to let go of that completely because I don't actually care about that.
This is so fascinating. I love the visual you just gave us because it's something that's so common where we feel like we're moving forward, but a part of us is still stuck. It's still stuck in the old place, right? And so it's almost like we have this, we have this parachute behind us. So we are actually running forward, but the parachute is pulling us in the other direction. And what ultimately matters is not the average of both movements, but where we're going in the end. And we're going nowhere because those two movements cancel each other out. And that's the doubt that sets in, right? That's where the permission base is lowered. And when we start, and I've seen a lot of people actually that were in your position that then actually gave in to the parachute and they, you know, they rebounded right back to where they were. And that's what I call the waiting room, right? You go right back onto that couch in the waiting room and you take another turn, another year or 2 years, you climb the ladder a little more. You make a little more money. So that appeases maybe the initial pain, but then you're right back to it. Then it's, oh my God, I still feel like shit. This is still not right.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you get unhealthy, your health suffers, your relationships suffer, your mental health suffers. And then it's a question of like, how much more has to happen before you actually cut the straps of the parachute and you just actually run across that boundary line yourself.
Yeah.
That is a big teaching, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that conversation really helped in that I saw an example of you're also someone who had built so much before you decided to do this. And, you know, at some point we just kind of, it's not cutting losses. The way I see it is nothing ever goes to waste.
Yeah.
I will reintegrate, and I have reintegrated a lot of those teachings and that learning, those learnings and those experiences in what I do, just indirectly, just not the way I was expecting to reintegrate them. They didn't get lost. But yeah, I don't use them on paper to prop myself up and make myself sound more experienced and more important. Because in those days before we met, if you had asked me to introduce myself, I would have started with what I did for a living. And like, that's who I thought I was. And so when you took that away, it's like, well, shit, I'm naked. Like, what do I say about myself other than what I do for a living and all the impressive sounding things that I.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. So you're saying that once again, that example where what we do kind of takes over our identity. Like we identify, especially outwardly also in society, via the achievements that we've had, but also what is on our business card, which I always find so interesting. You know, you go to a new place, maybe a mixer or some kind of, you know, event. And then people, of course, they don't ask you who you are. They ask you, what do you do? And it's a very difficult conversation for me because I know what their expectation is. But at the same time, I also understand what my intention is. And now I use these words very consciously: intention, expectation. One is directed inwardly, intention that comes from my heart. Expectation is what the world sees in you and what you want to be out there. So while you're saying that, you were actually going through that exact crisis of like, wait a second. It should be that you are someone that's not defined by the thing that you do, especially if that thing that you do right now doesn't feel like a reflection of yourself,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. It comes down to, do we care more about how we feel and how we relate to ourselves, our relationship to ourselves, or do we care more about how other people feel about us or what they think about us? If they even think about us, honestly, because a lot of times, you know, we...
That's so true.
But it's like, which one am I going to prioritize? And what I found in the end is that I was neglecting myself emotionally instead of taking care of my own emotions and working through painful experiences that I had in the past, working through facing certain things about myself and integrating certain parts of myself. Instead of doing that, I just went outside to the Band-Aid, hoping that by having that Band-Aid of quote unquote achievement, other people would feel a certain a type of way about me, which I can then say, see, they feel that way, so I deserve to feel good about myself because they think I'm great. It's like
a justification.
Yes, it's like this like extended, overcomplicated, unnecessary twists and turns towards just, why not just take a shortcut and say, you know what, I am successful, period. Not because of what I've accomplished, not because of what I did, because I'm here and I'm pursuing a valuable desire that is rooted in love, in understanding of my connectedness to everything else, and in doing that, we are successful.
Boom! Drum roll.
To the next achievement and the next thing and the next thing, because that game is a losing game.
Mm-hmm.
You're just constantly pursuing the next thing and the next thing, and by the time I would achieve the next thing would lose its appeal because I believe that fundamentally something is wrong with me. So therefore, even if I achieved it, it must be that thing isn't that big of a deal after all, because I did it. That, or maybe it was a fluke or whatever, but I wouldn't, it's like, it's an illusion that you think you're going to feel a certain type of way once you acquire the result. It's an illusion. That's the biggest lesson I learned from those experiences. So,
amazing.
Unclenched buttholes, I guess.
This is great. I love that. You just gave us, I think, nature's own definition of success, which is not validated by external achievements, but by the freedom that you give yourself internally to be who you are and experience the moment as it is and actually grow in that moment as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people make themselves dependent on these outside validations. Their growth is not owned by them. It's owned by the outside world, right? They grow in the eye of what the outside world validates and doesn't validate. And I have these conversations a lot where people confuse growth with growing numbers, you know, multiplying numbers, adding numbers, because that's what we learn. In school, we learn the algebraic version of growth, which is the number has to grow. When the number gets bigger, it is better, which is bullshit. That's total absolute bullshit. But as you just said, this inner emotional state that we grow in terms of awareness, hey, I'm showing up as myself. I'm doing me. How can I not be successful if that is my truth, if that is my reality, which I have come to define as happy work? If you bring that attitude into your doings, into the creation of value. And now that leads me over to how do you bring that value into your business? Or how does your business forward that attitude that you have, that energy, that success that you celebrate within you? How do you forward that to the people that you serve? How do you create that value? What do you do there?
You know, because of the example you used, and I love it about nature, because the thing about nature is, it's the way I see it, it's the closest thing to pure consciousness. It's like nature has no agenda other than expressing itself. You know, the birds don't sing so that you'd think their singing is beautiful. They just do that. You know, trees grow and they bear the best fruits that they can bear because that's what they do. When they are in the kind of environment that is conducive to them producing the best that they can produce. And how I see it, and I mean, what I do is in marketing and branding. That's my background, is marketing. But I love more than anything for people to know who they are, love who they are, and bring it to everything they create. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to marketing ourselves, to marketing our services, I always say that everyone is a unique expression of the same divine consciousness. We are all this unique expression of the universe, and we all come in our own unique ways and our unique flavors and our unique, you know, colors. And there's nothing more beautiful than seeing people express that joy fully and freely in what they do. And so we could, you know, we could do marketing the old way, which is thinking about what does the market want and who do I need to be in order for the market to buy what I have to sell. And that's an externally validated creation, right? And then the other way, the way that I appreciate, is to look within. Who do I want to be? What do I want to create? What is my gift? Who am I? What am I bringing to the world? And then looking at the market and how can I find an intersection without changing the truth of my message or my truth, but at the same time, finding a way that serves what the market wants and desires in a way that is healthy for everyone. Because how I see it is, if you're creating from the heart, it is always going to be good for you, for everyone around you. Okay. But it's that part that I think is missing in the way most mainstream marketing advice is. Like, it doesn't take into account the person, the creator. It doesn't take into account who we are. It just looks at what does the market want? What is the market already willing and able to buy?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do they desire? Exactly. And, you know, at most, they might think about what's good for, you know, let's not do anything unethical or illegal. At best, that's what we see. But very few people in business now, unfortunately, take into account their own truth, who they are, because we think that it's a frivolous thing. Like, why would I... What do you have to think about, you know, whatever the market wants? I'll just create what the market wants and then sell that. And then somehow that'll fulfill a certain feeling within me. But I think it's impossible. I think that it really has to come from within. Every creation has to come from within. And marketing becomes a communication of who we really are, as opposed to this manipulative exercise of wanting to get into the minds of other people and communicate that in a way that open their wallets and buy whatever it is that we are creating. So,
well, you're touched upon so much right there. And for those who have been listening to me for a while, you probably recognize a lot in what was just said, because that's really the whole chain of value explained in terms of marketing. I myself have 21 years in marketing background, and I know exactly what you mean. This transactional attitude of marketing, that it is here to milk existing markets, existing desires and cravings, not even needs, just existing wants and desires, fuel those so that the distance between the decision making and the wallet becomes shorter, right? That in the end, efficient marketing should be about spending as little time as possible to get to the transaction. That's what we have come to define as marketing. And the branding oftentimes has also become reverse engineered, where it's not the branding that expresses the truth of the brand, but what people are most willing to see and what will make them the most engaged and the most willing to pay to buy from that brand, which is inverted logic. It's like you have a spouse and that spouse does everything to please you. Now, I don't need to tell you that this makes for a toxic relationship, right? And I love that what you say also portrays the toxicity in relationships that we now have with brands, because brands, even though they want to keep you in the book, at the same time, they're mostly interested in the quick transaction, which is... it's the one night stand in the end, right? It's the one night stand. We don't really care about relationships with brands. We care more about, like, hey, I know you want this. Buy it from me, because either my price is lower or my ads are more, you know, funny. They're funnier or more interesting, or I have more media spending, so you see them more often. And that is inverted. That is completely inverted, as you say. And also another thing, because of... you said that marketing celebrates in communication the truth, our truth, who we are. Isn't that what a good musician also does?
Yeah.
Because show me those musicians that play, that design their music, compose their music for their audience. That is horrible.
It's funny that you use this. Literally last week, I don't know if it's last week or earlier this week, I was out on a walk and I was thinking about how weird music sounds when the musician is trying to piece together, like, what are some common emotions and feelings right now? Let's put them together into the song and try and manufacture a hit of like a quote unquote successful song. And it ends up making absolutely no sense. It might sound good, maybe it's catchy, but it really doesn't land. But then you can tell when somebody is really writing from their truth, like somebody who's actually connecting to their feelings and they're relaying the information. And they're not so much focused on themselves or even on the message as much as they're focused on being the vessel for the message to be communicated through them. Yes. What comes through that person, the kind of music that comes through these people is timeless. The creations in general that come from that place are timeless. And so it's funny that you talked about this because I was just thinking about that example. It's like
maybe we can draw a line there between art, because that's art. You know, when someone creates from their truth.
Yeah, everything is art when it's an expression of who we are.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you reverse engineer what you create based on information and data you have from a market, an audience, then it becomes craftsmanship. You know, then it becomes something like holo art. Like it might look like it's a nicely framed piece of wall art, but it's actually just here to be a sellable item, an item that has no originality, which I think nowadays with the rise of AI is a big conversation. Because originality is a conversation that we don't really make part of AI. We're now here in the production cycle. Like, how can we be more efficient in producing things that, you know, we can unleash upon the world? The originality has its origin, pun intended, in our truth. That's where all things that have pushed the envelope in this universe come from. From a single point of truth, from a single point of inner knowledge and wisdom that's paired with the desire of expression that becomes art. And marketing is just the logical consequence from that. It's to me, it's kind of like the professional act of packaging the art so that it makes sense once it connects with an audience, so that the audience sees it. Yeah? So it becomes visible, relatable, and then in the end also shareable.
Yeah.
But not this weird discipline where I actually wonder what your stance, what your take is on that. So I worked in the past, I worked for luxury watch brands in Switzerland. And there was a shift that happened that I was able to observe because I was doing their high-end video content, like their commercials, their TV and theater commercials for a while. I realized that first, their watches were creations of artists. There was a person in a workshop that was a freak, like an 80-year-old person that was just trying to see how far can we push a watch. You know, it's tiny, this small thing on your wrist to make certain things, and it still be possible and it still be contained. Like, how far can we go? I want to know. So that was a desire, a human desire, something beautiful. And then they built this. And then I was asked to promote it. Right. But then about 4 years later, they created a watch that was based on data they had received from their audiences. So they had asked their people, their buyers, their previous buyers, what kind of watch would you want to wear? And now the person in the shop was forced to build something that had nothing to do with his dream and with his desires, but everything with a sellable item.
Right, right.
And I again was asked to shoot the film. And it was a horrible, vain affair. But in the eye of the business, hugely successful because, yeah, of course, you know, they already had a built-in audience. Those people have said, yeah, I would buy a watch like that. Well, they bought the watch. And so for the company, it was great. By the same token, the brand integrity took a massive hit. So the brand itself lost massive recognition amongst those who truly loved the brand for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And now they became just another watch brand.
And that's so sad. I see that so, like, I mean, I worked in e-commerce for the longest time, and I saw that, like, so many brands and businesses and entrepreneurs who start with these lofty big ideas about how they want to do things in a certain type of way, and then they are faced with the pressure, or they give in to the pressure and they become something that they are not. And this is not really, not to take a jab at this approach, because I don't think there's anything wrong with looking at the market and asking what the market wants, creating it, if you're doing a good job and selling it and making good money, if you're doing something good, right, and you're creating good things, there's nothing wrong with that. But there is a deep seated desire in all of us, but some people more than others, to express the inner artist, which I believe is in every single person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this tug of war, I guess, between the artist and the entrepreneur. It's the entrepreneur side of us that wants to ask the market what the market wants and create what the market wants and sell it to the market. But then the other side of ourselves, the artist, is wanting to express something within and not give a shit about what anybody...
It's kind of like church and state, huh?
Little bit. I mean, they don't have to be at odds. This is the biggest skill to develop as creatives, and what I call spiritual creative. And I did not invent this term, but a spiritual creative is somebody who is creating from a connection to their spirit. It's the best term that I found so far that expresses somebody who is creating from the heart. If you're someone who wants to create things that represent who you are at your truth, I think the biggest skill to learn is to know, what are your non-negotiables?
Mm-hmm.
What is it you genuinely care about? What is it that you really, really care about? And be willing maybe to negotiate and work around the other things. So, like, for example, for this gentleman creating these watches, what is it about this that he cares about? And I would be stubborn about that and then ask the market about everything else. In my case, and business, doing marketing with full self-expression, there are lots of things I am willing to do for the market in order to make a, you know, successful offer and sell. But if it's not aligned with those core things I care about, these values that are not necessarily values in terms of what's ethical and what's moral, but what do I care about? What's non-negotiable to me? And when it comes to those things, there's no amount of money that's going to make it okay for me to, I don't care what the market wants. The market wants me to create something that is not aligned with the core of the brand, the essence of the brand, then that's not going to happen. But most people don't take the time to actually ask those questions and reflect on who they are and who they want to be and what they care about and what are their non-negotiables. And that's why you have a brand that flip-flops based on what the market wants. And that's where the brand asks the audience today, and then tomorrow the audience wants something different, so the brand changes. And like in the example that you mentioned, the integrity of the brand is lost. And the sad part is that they've lost on the fewer people that are true fans,
mm-hmm.
who are willing to probably spend a lot more money over the long run.
Oh, yes.
Because they try to capture a bigger, wider market, not understanding that it's not about having more customers.
We have plenty of examples like that. So to kind of bring that home, what you just said, I think I have some words I would like to, you know, just throw into the bucket to kind of, I think, exemplify what you said, because I believe the very same thing. Here's the thing, the non-negotiable versus the flexibility that we should have in our marketing with regards to our markets and audiences. Here's the thing. Again, in going back to the musician that plays on a stage, the why is non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you in this? Why are you building watches? Why are you making music? Where does the music come from? Non-negotiable. The source is non-negotiable. But how is negotiable? How? Which means the booking agent telling the artist, the musician, you have to tour. You have to play in these four cities. That doesn't touch on the why. It touches on the how. How is your why being brought to the audience? And that's where I think we need to have this line of connection to the world. That's where it's important. That's where we should not be like, no, I will not play life. I will not tour. I will just be in my studio, make music for myself. Well, fine. You're going to be a starving artist all your life and nobody will ever hear your art. So when businesses create these questionnaires, we're like, tell us what you would like us to improve. How did we do? What could we do better? That is the danger. They have to be specific in asking the how questions. You know, how could we deliver our values that are non-negotiables so that you could actually see them better, quicker, sooner, in more efficient ways, but never ask questions about the heart of your offering itself. And there are a lot of who do that. They actually like, what would you like us to do? Well, no, don't ask that, because if you don't know what you are supposed to do, you should not have a business. You should not. You're literally empty. You completely, you know, you will fall for the next fad. When I love the example again, you know, you referred it to the guy in the workshop, the watchmaker. His ideas, his visions for the watches, they should be non-negotiables. You know, to create masterpieces that turn into wearables, non-negotiable. But then, you know, there are choices of colors, materials maybe, or then themes around these watches. There are nautical themes and pilot themes, you know, whatever. That become negotiable because this is how the market perceives those values and where it would make more sense. Like the value would have more impact. You know, like you love healthy food, but then you realize with the setting where you are, you have access to different ingredients. You can't just be like, no, I will only cook with carrots. Well, there are no carrots here. Right? Nobody eats vegetables here. Maybe you can take your why and shift it into this area where you don't need to, you know, kind of pervert yourself out of shape. You can still relish in your art, but you use different brushes and different colors now because this is really touching upon a need that is out there.
Love that distinction. I love, love, love that distinction. And I think that This is it. Like when we talk to people and we ask them questions and we ask them, what are your problems? I guess, what do you struggle with? What do you desire? It's not bad to try to, in my opinion, at least, it's not wrong to try to help the market solve their problems, meet their needs. I mean, that's what is creating the exchange that most people are going to spend money on. But the way I see it is ask the questions, but also ask your inner authority. Mm-hmm. Ask the question to the other person and then see how you feel about that. And the key word is feeling, not what do you think. It's how do you feel about it? And this took me the longest time to really get it because I was leaning so much on what do I think about this? And my mind, of course, would be like, well, this is logical. This is not logical. But then the heart wants what the heart wants. And the feelings are the easy way to know because it can read so much information that's harder to process through the mind. But I can instantly feel if somebody says to me, well, my problem is I really struggle with DMs on LinkedIn. I want you to create an offer that helps me, you know, cold DM people to sell my service. I'm going to be like, I don't know. Thank you. I'm not interested because I'm not excited to create that. And I don't want to be a martyr and create something I'm not enjoying because you want it and be like, here, okay, fine. I'll help you solve it.
Boundaries.
Yes, it has to be this joyful thing that I create because I'm enjoying it and because I love it and it feels like a gift. And then you present it and it solves somebody else's problem. It helps somebody else. And that's beautiful when it's joyful for me to create, but it helps relieve somebody else's pain or helps them meet their desire. I think that's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
That, you know,
yeah, I agree.
As creative and conscious entrepreneurs, we have to really lean on in our emotions. Yeah.
So, In wrapping this up, because of course we went way over time, I already knew that.
I didn't even realize.
So, a critical point you just brought up. I have learned in my experience that if I ask people what they need, they will not know.
Yeah.
You ask a person what they, you know, what is it that you would like to have at the very source? The answer you get is, to quote, you know, the famous guy who started more or less the automotive revolution, right? They would want a faster horse. They would not want the automobile. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful when we ask people about the why why should I exist? Why should I be in business? And what kind of value would you like me to provide to you? You will get bogus answers. You will just get what's already there, but in cheaper, with more features, faster, more available. Yeah. But once you have that essential mission in place and you ask them, because you now know what kind of need you're serving, you mm-hmm. ask them, how could that specific need that I'm already serving be served better? How could you, what would you find would have made it easier for you to get to it quicker and wrap it up more beautifully? What would have helped you? Now, that's where a conversation can kind of be sparked, I feel. You know, it's kind of like what I've come to see, that now people are part of a conversation that makes sense, versus before you kind of asking them, oh, why should I start a business? And they're like, I don't know, maybe a cheaper hotel room. Like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, no, it's not. It's the last thing we need. But here's my hotel room. Did you love the premise of the value that I was offering? It was great, but here's an issue I had. Oh, take note. Now, this is great. But that requires, of course, for people to actually express their art in the first place, right? Don't go out there and ask people, what kind of artist should you be? What should my art be? Do you have an idea?
It sounds silly, right? When you say it, like, oh, wow. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But, right? But I don't think most people see themselves as artists. It's not, it has become this big word.
Oh, yeah.
So much more that it's, yeah. It almost feels self-important to say we are artists or something, but yeah. Mm.
But we are important. We are. Give yourself permission to be important. Okay, I am so sorry. I could go on. We could go on forever. We're going to pick this up at a later point where we left off. Aliana will be back. Don't anybody worry. And I actually, you know, I feel like, so I'm in the process of designing a course, you know, that helps people create self-leadership. And I'm pretty sure that Aliana is going to be part of it. I have a sensation. I'm going to ask her on that. How does everybody feel about that? I think your expertise, your art is much needed. It's much needed, my friend.
I love that.
So thank you so much for being on here, for sharing your truth and your wisdom. How can people reach out to you? How can they get in touch with your beautiful art?
Thank you. My marketing is actually very limited. I like to keep it simple and sweet so that I can have fun with it and focus on quality over quantity. The best place is the website, brandsarealive.com. There is a section called Mojo, or brandsarealive.com/mojo. I send a video about once a week, once every couple of weeks. Yeah, and they'll get a starter kit when they join. So that's
wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. We'll make sure to leave those information in the show notes below, so you can look that up. And if anybody has a hard time, you know, getting in touch with you, get in touch with me, and somehow we make it happen.
Oh, and also I'll leave my LinkedIn if they want to connect with me there too. I try to make LinkedIn more fun. So
wonderful. Wonderful. It definitely needs a little more fun in there. Okay. Well, that's it from me. Any closing words, or because I'm out?
Just grateful for this connection and for us being able to have this conversation again. Thank you.
Likewise, my friend. See you next time.